This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Welcome everyone to the penultimate session of our conference. It's gone so quickly, it's incredible. In this session, we're celebrating DGHA's 10th anniversary. So there's an answer to one of your quiz questions. In the 10 years since we became an incorporated association, our membership has grown to 169 full or associate members and over 650 Facebook followers. We'll hear some reflections on our history from three former presidents today. And we pay tribute to DGHA's first president, Judith Killen, who was unfortunately passed away.
That's for chapter two.
Escape. We'll then cut the 10th anniversary cake and present the Judith Killen Golden Harness Award. In recognition of Judith's contribution to the dog guide sector, to a very special guest who's with us today. Okay, so to our three panellists, Greg Madsen, Rowena Dowling and Nadia Maniazzo, the three former presidents, we'll start with the earliest one, which is Greg Madsen. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Kevin. How are you? How are you going?
Good, good. I've just got a few questions for each of you, so I'll just run through them.
Okay.
So when were you president, Greg, and what motivated you to take up that role?
I was president between 2010 and 2005, so just a little bit after Dog Guide Handlers Australia was formed. And I was motivated to join because I got involved at that stage with people like Nadia, Judith, of course, Rowena, and another dog guide handler, which we unfortunately lost in Janet Shaw. And when I come on board, the organisation was looking to sort of structure itself up. And I had a little bit of knowledge around how to incorporate an organisation, some IT skills in creating websites and the back end side of things. So I've been involved in that sort of all the way through, pretty much. But also, I'd also had my first dog guide in Pollock. So I was looking for that peer support network and found it within Dog Guide Handlers Australia.
Great. Thanks, Greg. So what were some of the major issues you and your committee sort of looked at or experienced at that time of your presidency?
So like I said, at the very beginning, we needed to incorporate the organisation so that we could then apply for grants. So we were successfully incorporated and ever since 2010 have been able to get some grants, mainly to hold dog guide handlers conferences. And the first one we did in Adelaide in 2014, which is an absolutely fantastic success for the committee at that time and dog guide handlers in general. Absolutely amazing to try and get that number of dogs. And I think we probably had about 40 from memory, something like that. If you ever heard of the term trying to herd cats, you want to try and get 40 dog guides in one place to take a group photo. It's similar experience to herding cats. That was a fantastic experience, not only for us, but for the general public, having, you know, staying in a hotel with 40 dogs coming and going and behaving as they should. That was a fantastic experience. We've done some advocacy around dog guide toileting areas, and there is a great example of that in Brisbane, where they've got a dog guide toileting facility on the inside of the secure area so people can toilet their dogs before they get on a plane. Next week, they're launching one here in Perth. So that's at least two, and I think there is an area just outside the, well, outside the terminal in Adelaide, specifically for toileting dog guides. So they're great things. We've tried to advocate for dog run parks, safe areas where people can run their dog guides. But I think the best thing that we've done and continue to do is provide vehicles that people can use to talk to each other, peer support, our Facebook, the Twitter, the website, the online meetings that we have, general meetings and members meetings that we have, where we bring in people, who are topic experts to come in and speak to our members and pass on knowledge, much the same as what we've done here over the last couple of days.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Greg. And you've really addressed this, but any other key achievements you feel over your time in terms of you and your committee?
Just basically keeping the organisation up and running and try to make it as relevant as we can. As we all know, as advocates, it's difficult to try and solve the issues that people have, especially with, we were talking about refusals way back when it was started, and we're still talking about the same issues now, issues around access to accommodation, access to taxis, refusals in restaurants. And it's just unfortunate that although, the advocacy that we've done, and the public relations that we've done, and not only us, but the agencies themselves have worked hard on trying to get awareness out there amongst the community, still we get refusals on a daily basis.
Right. Thank you. And finally, just have you got an anecdote from your experience? Just something you observed while you were president, or something had happened.
Yes, I've got a good one actually. Involves you, Kevin.
Oh dear,
you didn't know at the time. I had my second dog, Nicholas, was a great guide, but he did have a naughty side to him. And I remember we were at a dog guide convention in Sydney. And I was standing at the top of the steps, just feeling around with my foot to find the first step with Nicholas alongside me. And you walked into the lobby with your dog, and Nicholas decided that he wanted to play with that dog. So he dragged me down the steps. Fortunately, I didn't lose my balance. But that's probably the worst experience I've had with a dog behaving very badly and unsafely.
It was. Oh, well, at least, as you say, it ended safely.
It did.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg. That's some great insights from your time. And now welcome Rowena Dowling. How are you, Rowena?
Good, Kevin. Thank you.
It's great. Great to see you. So when were you president, and also what motivated you to take on the role?
I was president. I've had left the meeting. On a number of occasions. I actually haven't looked up the dates. My main contribution was as secretary. I was secretary of DGHA for many years.
Yes, yeah.
At the same time, I was also briefly president after Nadia, I think, and then had another short stint a couple of years down the track. What motivated me? Well, the motivation was I was one of the founding members of DGHA because there was a need for such an organisation as this. I'd like to congratulate DGHA on being incorporated for 10 years, but we actually got the organisation together in 2009, which is more than 10 years ago. And it's just that I think the original four founding members just saw that there was a need for a professional dog guide handler organisation in Australia, such as were already existing overseas. We just saw that there was a need for peer support, advocacy information, and for networking amongst dog guide handlers around Australia, and also for networking with the dog guide handler schools to recognise that handlers and schools need to work in collaboration and cooperation.
Yeah, great. And it's you can see that happening right now. 10 years or more than 10 years since you had your first initial meetings ago. So that's great. issues that you recall in the early days, Rowena, that you and your committee sort of looked at?
Again, as Greg just said, we seem to be revisiting the same issues over and over.
Yeah.
It's very common in the disability sector that we tend to fight the same battles.
Alan Wendley has left the meeting.
I guess what I was really focused on was sharing of information and trying to get the uniformity of dog guide services around Australia, so each state is different.
Yes.
We were trying to get that uniformity and to get that peer support going in all states and looking at getting client feedback mechanisms at all dog guide schools around Australia. Much of that has come to pass, but there's still a way to go with that.
Yeah. No, that's great insights to, you know, a unique role that we can play. And also, so anything that sticks out for you in terms of achievements?
I think the biennial conferences are the biggest achievements. That really, to me, is part of what DGHA exists for. There's been a number of them now. I was never president when the conferences were happening, but I had an input into getting the Sydney conference together.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And I just think that's probably one of the things that I enjoy most about DGHA. And I'd have to say that this weekend online has been a different experience, but in every way just as valuable for peer support. I mean, modern technology makes peer support, sharing information possible in all areas, doesn't it? Whether or not you're face-to-face, it's just like being in the same room together. So
yeah, it's been wonderful. Okay, and just to finish on, any anecdote you've been able to think of in terms of your experience, you know, with DGHA, et cetera?
From Stacey to everyone, it doesn't change.
That's a tough one. There are so many episodes. I mean, just life and the journey with a dog guide is extraordinary. and there's been so many instances at conferences that are memorable, but I can't really recall one in particular that stands out. It's just such it's such a blessing and such a challenge to be a dog guide handler. You know, as they say, your hand really feels empty when there's no leash in it. So, yeah, that's probably all I have to contribute there.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Rowena. And Nadia. Nadia Matiaso, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good. Okay, so similar questions for you. And that is, so you were very recently president for a number of years. And also, what was your motivation, I guess, to do that role?
So I remember back in 2009, there was a really active guide dog list, which was called Guide Dog L.
Yep.
That was run by Geordie Howe. Some of you may know Geordie. And we kept on coming back to the same thing. People were discussing issues and barriers that they were having, experiencing, and people were saying, we need an organisation, we need a peer support organisation, we need an organisation that's representative of dog guide handlers, blah, blah, blah. And everyone kept saying it and no one did anything about it. And I remember Judith Killen, late Judith Killen, sending an email out to say, well, pretty much put your, you know, what's the phrase? Put your money where your mouth is and let's form something. And the people that responded included people like myself, people like Rowena, people like Giselle, people like Janet Shaw, and also people like Geraldine Lane. I think she had some involvement at the beginning too. And I remember us coming together on Skype, some by phone, some by computer, and oh my God, was Skype dodgy in those days. and just starting the discussion around forming something. How do we do this? What do we do? Let's just discuss this. And it went, you know, as Greg said, when he came on as kind of president in 2010, and Rowena mentioned, we had been already having conversations and having some kind of member engagement and members meetings. And I don't know whether anybody remembers Ausdocs, which was our first website that Rowena had a lot of input into. And it was so difficult to set up a website that was reasonably accessible. And then we had trouble with our service providers or the service provider, the host. And, oh, God, I remember the headaches that all of that caused us. And for me, I guess, and that was a bit of a digression maybe, but for me the motivation was I got my first dog in 2008 and I wanted someone to talk about things that happened with my dog, things about tips, things about advocacy, all of those things that I wasn't necessarily going to get from a service provider, but I needed to talk to other peers that had dogs for a long time that were in my plate space in terms of that it was their first dog, that it was their second dog, all of those kind of things. And that was my motivation really for becoming part of, and I guess a founding member of DGHA.
Yeah, that's great. Excuse me. So anything else that sticks out? Or you're looking back over the 10 years for you or more, anything else that comes out? I think you can be pretty comfortable in seeing that what you aspired to have for DGHA actually came through in terms Absolutely. Of the peer support, etc. Anything else you think that DGHA has really contributed to over the years?
We did some work regarding airline travel. Again, Greg had some really good contacts in that space, and as Greg said, also there was some work around toileting facilities. I'm just trying to think, just the usual advocacy things, trying to bring dog guide organisations together. I was so excited when we had our first biennial conference in 2014 to have people from the main dog guide organisations in one room and presenting. And being nice to each other, you know, because, like, I don't know whether people get the undercurrent. Well, it's not really undercurrent, but there's a lot of passion within each organisation, and often that can be seen as that they're also competitive and they're competing against each other to A, get to have clients, B, train dogs, all of those kind of things. But to have all of those people in a room and presenting to a bunch of handlers and speaking together, I think that was really good. In 2016, I think it was, we had our first international guests, Martine, Kevin, one of yours,
yes,
know yep. her well. So we had the Kiwis from over the ditch. That was excellent. So there were lots and lots of things, some really good members meetings. We actually had some international presentations at one stage, so many things that I think the organisation has done, and I'm so happy to see where DGHA is at the moment, and I absolutely congratulate the current committee in terms of A, the conference this weekend, but also in the really, really hard work that they've been doing to up our social media presence, generally just influence the agencies, work with the agencies, and have a really great space for peers to come together.
Thanks. That's lovely, Nadia. Really good. Thank you. All right. And just finally, an anecdote about your experience from a personal level, I guess. Yeah.
Was anybody around in 2016? Committee people. I had worked, we were organising gifts for everybody and prizes for raffles and things. And I approached a couple of and all our committee worked really hard to get stuff, donations and things. I approached a couple of pet shops that I virtually lived in, and they all donated some really good stuff. So here I am 3 weeks before, packaging everything up in boxes and posting it out, and getting the parcel people came, picked it up, and, you know, and I said to them, do we need to label these? You know, there's the addresses there, but do I need to do anything else? Oh, no, it'll all get there. Well, if anyone's found maybe three or four boxes floating in the, I don't know where, full of dog stuff, could they please return them to the DGHA committee, because they're our 2016 conference raffle stuff. I remember leaving Friday morning to come up to go to Adelaide, and Thursday at 20 to 5, we still hadn't found the parcels, and I was beside myself. So there was a pet shop down the road where I had got some gear donated. I rang them and I said, what time do you close? And they said 5:30, and I said, please, please, please don't close till I get there. I need to come and buy some stuff. And I remember, I reckon I bought about $300 or $400 worth of stuff, maybe a little bit more, and they gave me a decent discount. But then I had to pack it all in my suitcase to bring it to Adelaide. Oh God, it was a nightmare. I just don't want to ever go through that one again.
Wow. Yes. Well, thankfully, John Hardy at this conference has everything and has had everything in his safekeeping for some time. So we don't have to worry this time.
Yes, I'll need to learn from him, Kevin.
Look, I really appreciate it, Rowena and Greg and Nadia, for your words. That's really nice. Okay, now it's time to celebrate our 10th anniversary of incorporation with the cake. Now, Greg, what I was doing before I started that got me a bit lost was trying to turn my video on, but maybe you're the only one that can do that, is it?
You turn your video on?
I'm trying to, didn't give me an option to turn my video on.
Okay, I'll have a look.
If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter, but just for those who...
If I may, Vanilla, you want a computer?
Yep.
Okay, if you're in a Windows, it's Alt-V or Command-V for a Mac.
Oh, yeah, I'll try it. I've tried it already, but I'll try it again just in case. No, I have to go around to the Zoom window. Hang on. Here it is. Alt-V. Yes.
Yeah, you got it.
Thank you very much. Okay, I'll just go back around to my notes. There we go. Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you. Okay, so now some people can see me. I'm pushing my laptop back and I'm picking up a nice plate here, putting it in front of the computer. That's it. And what I have in front of me is a chocolate mousse hazelnut almond roll. It sort of looks like, I guess, a sausage dog body, but it's all chocolate. And it's coated with cream, which is in swirls all over the top, some more nuts, and there's a couple of Oreol, those cookie things on it. So it's a pretty spectacular cake. Yes.
Can you raise it to your head height where your face is?
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. There.
Bit higher.
Oh, gee.
And tilt it down slightly towards the computer. That's it.
Oh, not too much.
That's good.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Well, I'll bring my screen down a bit. Will help there. Because now I'm going to cut the cake. Firstly, play drum roll. Right. Whoops, better stop that. There we go. Cut the cake. Now, I've got the horrible job of having to eat it now. But I think I'll get through it all right. I'll bring my computer back. Okay. Greg, are you able to unmute people, like everyone?
Actually, everybody can unmute themselves. So if people wanted to unmute themselves, Alt-A, if you're on a computer, Command-A, I believe, on a Mac, and star six if you're on a phone.
Everyone's unmuted.
Wonderful. All right.
Are you going to eat that whole cake yourself, Kevin?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll take one for the team this time, Annette.
Annette, I've sent Olympia already to his house to get some. She's on her way.
Nadia, can you ask Olympia to pick me up a piece too?
Look, I have no idea what's going to come back. I suspect none of it.
Exactly. All right. So what I want you to do is just help me sing happy birthday to DGHA. So one, two, three. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to DGHA.
Happy birthday to you.
Hip hip.
Hooray!
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 Now, stay, if you can stay unmuted, but stay quiet just for a couple of minutes, and then I'll get you to mute in a little while. Great, thank you. Just going through. Here we are. So now we go to the Judith Killen Golden Harness Award that I mentioned earlier, our award that we give each conference. And we have a winner this year, an outstanding winner, and it is John Gosling, AM. Yay! Here Yay! And Yay! Well.
I'm here, John.
Congratulations.
Well
deserved.
Yep.
Very well deserved.
Okay, if you could all mute
well
now,
deserved,
that would
John.
Be good.
Well deserved.
Thank you.
Fantastic, John.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations, John.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much, thanks, John. Now, I'll just run through a little bit of a bio for John. I'm reading excerpts from a media release earlier this year from Guide Dogs Victoria. So John Gosling, AM, often referred to as the elder statesman of guide dogs in Australia, has been honoured with a member of the Order of Australia, an AM, for significant service to people who are blind or have low vision. And in the same week, he celebrated 50 years of service to GDB.
Wow.
John decided at age 16 that he'd spend his life working with guide dogs, but had to wait 6 long years to get to the minimum application age of 22. Mm. In that time, he was called up for national service and served in Vietnam. And he even wore his army uniform to his interview at Guide Dogs Victoria when he came back, hoping that it would help him secure the job, which obviously it did. When asked what he's most proud of during his tenure, John doesn't point to one single achievement. Instead, he says, it's the freedom and the independence that guide dogs bring people who are blind or have low vision, and experiencing the trust they place in our staff and in our beautiful dedicated dogs, that is the real honour, says John. Some of John's career highlights. In 1992, invited an invitation to be an assessor for the International Guide Dog Federation. In this role, John assessed around 24 applicant guide dog schools against the international standards in United Kingdom, Japan, Taiwan, Norway, Switzerland, Poland, Israel, Slovakian Republic, USA, and many more. So similar to Paul Adrian, he's done so much international work as well as what he's done for us here in Australia. He was elected 3 times to the board of the International Guide Dog Federation. He was awarded the Order of the Order of Australia Medal, the OAM, in 2001. He won the Keith Holdsworth Perpetual Award for the Guide Dog and Orientation and Mobility Instructors Association. And he was a recipient of the 2018 International Guide Dog Federation Ken Lord Award. And now the Judith Killen Golden Harness Award for your outstanding contribution to the dog guide sector and especially to the lives of dog guide users. Congratulations, John.
Thank you so much, Kevin, and thank you to those people who may have nominated me and also for the decision of your committee to decide to make this a presentation today. This is something very special for me because whilst I've enjoyed receiving the other awards, and one thing that's sure is that it's not an individual thing, whilst I'm very proud of what I've done, it's certainly one that spreads across the whole organisation. And today to be seeing a significant representation of your group, it certainly is a joy for me. And one as I, you know, heading towards, I'm 72 now, heading towards the years of potential retirement to be able to do other voluntary work, it's something that is very special. For me to receive the Judith Killen Award, the Golden Harness Award, is something really special because I've known Jude, or I had known Jude up and from a time of about 1978 when she trained with her dog guide Merrin from Perth. And the last time I met up with her was when she came over for an Olivia Newton-John fundraiser, and we gave her dog a free run after its long flight. She wasn't super well at the time, but as always, an extremely courageous person. I would describe Jude as being a fighter, and those people who were with this group in the early years would have taken some sort of encouragement from her intelligent reflection on what people who are using dog guides require. I also mentioned having listened to that comments of Kevin then, my wife, because probably I've been on the road for 2 years, to put it all together, and the fact that of our 50 years of marriage and our 8 children and now 22 grandchildren, that is something that is fairly special to me. The other point that I'd like to make is to acknowledge the wonderful work of the dog guide organisations, breeding staff, those who are working in the kennels, those that are on the puppy program, also the dog guide trainers and instructors. But it is something that to see the focus just solely on the instructor is not quite right, and there's no way they can do that on their own. Those folks that are behind when they go out with the dogs, making sure that everything works and making preparations to have the dog in the best frame of mind, particularly coming up to allocation, that's significant. Because if the dog isn't settled, isn't confident, isn't feeling loved, then it makes it hard, much more hard, to be able to take on its new role or whether it's through its training.
Yeah.
As mentioned, 16 was the age when I first made contact, and it was mentioned that I did do my national service and went to Vietnam. And whilst I've never done a tertiary degree, that was my attendance at university, to study people, to study conflict, to study fear, but also more importantly, to understand the reality of empathy, of genuine encouragement, supportive leadership, and as Lewis presented to us today so eloquently, understanding grief. Understanding grief. That's something that isn't just achieved through studying at tertiary level, but it's something that is in the heart of the person. That they are truly listening, not thinking what to say next, but just listening to hear that person sharing their story.
Yep.
One aspect. Okay, Kevin, to continue.
Yeah, keep going, John. This is
super, yep. Mate. In my first group of dogs was a dog called Scott, a handsome yellow Labrador, and he was allocated to a Dr. Trevor Anderson. Perhaps you may have known him over the years. Leaving the army, he studied psychiatry. And Trevor was in 6RAR, the same battalion as I. He was the regimental medical officer. But in August, of 1969, going out to attend a mine incident where there'd been a number of fatalities and injuries, on returning toward the chopper, a mine went off and blinded Kevin totally of his vision. It's one thing that I often reflect on is that when I did train Scott and he came through, this is one for the boys, Trevor, for what you did, the sacrifices you made and what you did all through your time in security, and you only had to march on Anzac Day to be hearing fellas saying, good on you, Doc, good on you, the black dog that's with him. And also I could say that Trevor used to often say that his assistant was his dog guide that was on its bed as patients come in for consultancy. What we had was, back in the day, residential programs that went for 7 days a week for 4 weeks. So you'd work the week before and you worked the week after. So it was pretty hard going. And those were days when we thought the more you do, the better it was. But by gee, it was good. But really, I'm glad when it was that we were able to cut it down to a more logical, understanding, educational opportunity. We would mostly go interstate for follow-up. And I recall on one of my trips, and we had a great laugh about this, the dog guide user in Sydney. And I was across the road. Of course, you know, we've got to hide all the time. It's terribly clandestine. So the dog doesn't see you. But anyway, this yellow lab went in. Oh, sorry, it was just coming out of a fruit shop. And it's helped itself to the biggest, juiciest tomato you've ever seen. So, you know, the action when they haven't got a good grip, and she was trying to grip onto it. And as she was doing it, it was squashing. And all this tomato juice was just coming down her face. And what's more was interesting to see is when she went right next door to a chemist, going toward the counter, I could see the pharmacy staff, you know, wondering what to say, what to look with this gorgeous Labrador, got dribble of tomato all the way down her face. But it was one that, you know, you've got to certainly can retain a sense of humour, and certainly you guys in your workaday life need to do that all the time. Dom Missouri programs probably for us headed off in the sort of early 1970s.
He's a good boy.
And one time that that I reflect on was up in the Kimberley. This was out of Derby, about 15 miles to the east of Derby. And I'd taken a dog guide by the name of Una, which I thought was a gorgeous name. She'd been a guide dog for a little while, but the young woman who had her as a guide had a corneal graft, which was successful. And so she said, well, look, somebody should be able to use this dog because I'm doing okay. And so it was a real asset, because Una by this was 3 years of age. And so she was an experienced and very settled dog. Now, where I was working with my client, Teresa, she was a First Nations people and was living in an lepusarium out of Derby. And she was enormously brave. And one of the great things that I can see it now, we came into the hospital within the lepusarium at that time. Anyone who was Indigenous had leprosy were interned, whereas people outside that of other cultures and so forth, they could be treated as an outpatient. But anyway, I remember as I brought Una up to the bed, I said, put your hand down, Teresa, and Una came up and she nuzzled her hand. And I thought, my God, look at that. And there was this gorgeous smile that came on Teresa's face. And I thought, we are off on a flyer here. This is just going so well, and it's so rewarding. That went on well. We went, taught Erna to find the way to church, to the dispensary, to the store, and to go out fishing, which they'd do on the back of going, traveling out on the trade body truck out to the tidal rivers of that Derby or Kimberley area. But then something happened that was a bit unfortunate, is that an emu turned up, came home to its place, the lepusarium, and I never knew anything about this, but he wasn't very happy to see Erna there and started to get cranky and go around in big circles like they do. And I thought, well, this is not nice. And so I've unclipped a leaf, made it ready for if he came in at us. And so anyway, I was staying within the convent of the St. John of God nuns who were the ones that managed and were operational at the lepusarium. And I said to the Mother Superior, I'm a bit concerned about this because if this emu actually barrels Erna, then this is going to collapse and the whole program, which has been so good, is not going to make it. So she said, look, I'll speak to the elders and I'll let you know in the morning. So I'm thinking from an Anglo-Saxon point of view, well, surely everyone realised the effort we've all made. It should be okay, but no. And this was pretty symbolic, that the elders said the emu was here first and Erna has come later. I thought, my God, cop a lot of that. You know, and that's telling her about history, something really important, but it's not, that there is something special of being original into the country.
Yeah.
So what would happen was then is that all of the, probably about five or six people would follow us around everywhere to keep this emu at bay. So when I was leaving, I went to the Derby airport with the mother, Antoinette, and I said, look, I'm still a bit worried. She said, John, we will all pray and it'll be okay. We'll have a peaceful conclusion. So about 2 weeks went past and we used to do reporting by mail in those days. And it came back and it was going okay. And Mother said, good news, John. What's happened is that Erna and the emu are best mates. And if any dogs come around, the emu is into it and chases the other dogs away. So I thought, gosh, isn't that fabulous? Different species that are taken on board. This is the reality of what's happening.
That's great.
Over the years, I've worked mostly, of course, with Labradors and Golden Retrievers. About 69-70% of all guide dogs in the world or dog guides are Labrador Retrievers. About 25% of the cross of that breed, then just pure Golden Retrievers and then just other working breeds. But other breeds that we've worked with over the journey was German Shepherds, a Kelpie, Boxer, Standard Poodle, Labradoodle. And I can recall one dog guide, his name was Yowie. What Yowie was a greyhound Labrador cross. Now, what happened, the male greyhound had jumped the fence and one of our brood bitches was mated and there were seven young dogs in the litter and Yowie was the one to be successful and he did famously with your president, Kevin. And I remember seeing footage of Kevin at the he was the world blind barefoot skier and the championships there. And there's Yowie on the bank. And when Kev would drop off the boat, Yowie would swim out and Kev would take onto his tail and get a tow back into the river bank.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
Thanks.
Some of what I could say is that some of the game changes along the way. Well, probably I think one of the first was that from 1972 onwards, every guide dog instructor in the first instance was trained as an orientation and mobility instructor, which opened up the whole concept of it being part of a rehabilitation process rather than just being solely dog trainers. That was very important. The International Year for Disabled Persons also was an enormous change, where it was started to describe as people with a disability, not to label blind person, but a person who is blind or vision, having a vision loss. And simple, just a word change, but the psychology and the philosophy of that is so powerful and thankfully changed now. Australia can be enormously proud because a chap by the name of Keith Holdsworth, he set up the first meeting of like-minded organisations at a meeting in Austria. They formed a working party, which went on then to be able to establish the International Guide Dog Federation. Australia was the only organisation in those early days that had instructors that were also orientation and mobility specialists. And we then, in fact, became, in a sense, world leaders. I know it's easy to say that, and you're only as good as your last game. But that was something that certainly was something we were exceptionally proud of and one that set the foundation for the future. Kevin mentioned some of the schools that I attended and also organisations other than the one that I'm working for have had people come from Malta and mainland China, Brazil, come to the organisation and train, and this has been sensational. Being on the International Guide Dog Federation board, as I was for 12 years, you stop thinking about organisations and started thinking about what it was you're actually doing. And my last 3 years of being tied directly to the International Federation was to be chairing the development committee. And I was delighted that we set up a O&M short course in Prague. And that was for guide dog trainers, dog guide trainers in particularly the Eastern European countries that didn't have any exposure to the idea of orientation as it related to working with a dog guide. Also, in terms of Brazil and some of those that came and studied in Kensington, they went back and they were leaders. They were leaders in the establishment of guide dog programs and dog guide programs in South America, in particular in Brazil. But then as it went on, we had programs starting up in Chile and also down in Argentina. And in time, if it wasn't for the particular virus at the moment, they were making grand steps in that enormous population to make available the opportunity and the freedom that dog guides provide. For me now, mentoring, encouraging younger people is very important. And it's a joy to be able to work with people overseas in particular. And I heard Paul Adrian's name mentioned before. It was great. I remember recruiting Paul back in the day before he was an instructor. And I brought him back for three interviews. And the last interview, he said, "Geez, John, how many more of these have I got to do?" And I thought, wow, I just want to be sure. And I was sure. And Paul's still working well. And I organised for him to go to Israel and work for 6 months, which was great before he went on to Germany and come back and work with organisations here in Australia. The other fact that was terrific, it is a real game changer, is the NDIS. You know, organisations just looking to receive donation and gifts and so forth. The cost of guide dogs overseas has gone up towards $100,000. That's a reality. So be able to, in a way that we're able to have a support through the process where all Australians, through federal government are able to provide the support of all disability programs. The NDIS has been wonderful. And my friend Bill Shorten, when he addressed the ALP National Conference and spoke so positively as to why the ALP should introduce the NDIS, there was broad federal bipartisan recognition that Bill and Jenny Macklin from Heidelberg here in Victoria were the principal architects of the NDIS. And I can assure you, in fact, Bill said to me that any dog guide users that have any trouble with their program, you know, and I'm not talking about it just a simple thing, but if you're running into a real challenge with your program of NDIS funding, he's very happy to hear from you. You can go online and see where he is. You see all his contact details. But he said he's found that when it is that he starts asking questions of the bureaucracy, they're pretty keen to get it sorted out quickly rather than to be one that, that they're going to be challenged with. So keep that in mind, that there is that support, that if you feel like you're just on your own as a dog guide user, then you can do that individually. You don't have to have the approval of your organisation of that has provided your dog. Some ways, and I think this perhaps that the NDIS has come a little bit bogged down in bureaucracy. We hope it can be cleared. We hope, and I know that watching it closely, that there is intended by the federal government to have cuts to the NDIS, whilst that might be disclaimed. But be sure that we've got to keep a watchful eye on this, because this is what's going to ensure that there are going to be dog guides and all those services and support networks for people not only of vision loss, but of all disabilities are going to be there for the future.
Yep.
Dog guide handlers are well serviced by organisations in this country. Certainly, there are some great leaders that we've now have a whole number of people that are in 20 and 30 years. I think of Mark Lyle up in Queensland, and as mentioned, Paul Adrian, and, you know, here in Victoria as well, you know, people over in Kensington and Kew that are extremely and well-respected around the world. And it's one that we have got links that if it is that you want something that it needs, that you want more information about or wanting to be linked up, there is a link within all those people. They have got good contacts and they're all about the idea of doing what's right. All client organisations now are client-centric. It's not just about the dogs and the beautiful puppies. The reality is it is about the person and ensuring that they're able to provide the best service possible. Really, when I conclude, I would like to say that just a few points that I would like to mention to you that may be useful. As far as you and your dog is concerned, appreciate how your dog is feeling at any given time. You know, if it's just being given a big serve by a dog behind a fence, you know, if that was someone, you know, verbally abusing us or looking what's more to attack us, we wouldn't be feeling really happy at the time. So ensure to try to maintain a quiet calmness about yourself. Try to quietly support your dog. Try to, as quickly as you possible, you know, bring back your sound of just being positive and being supportive rather than becoming excited. Because no matter what you're saying in an excited state and tone of voice, it still sounds the same to the dog. Hard to do, I know, particularly when you can't see what's going on. But do that if you can. If it's a hot day, try to look at strategies to stop on the nature strip before going to a curb to cross over the road if there are cars about. Just those sort of genuine experiences of love for your dog, because sure, as we've heard, these dogs love you and they will forever. The other is that be sure to praise your dog. Don't be angry with your dog. If you're cross with your dog, and there are times when you should, a chap by the name of Eric Ashley taught me this. He says, give them a correction with a smile on your face. You don't have to be angry. You just say, hey, come on, hey, what's that all about? You know, get on with it. So that's the sort of style of thing, because if you're emotionally engaged, it doesn't help the dog, because what's happened is that you're actually suppressing the dog's confidence, and what you're wanting to do is to build the dog's feeling of being being loved and supported. And my last to say is thank you to you all. I respect you guys so much. Everything that I've done in my life and why I'm still continuing to train two or three dogs 4 mornings a week is that I've been inspired. And people say, well, we're not inspired, we just do what we do. Oh yeah, I'm inspired because I've seen people show so much guts, so much determination over the years, so much hardship, so much pleasure and joy, so much leadership, that it has been my honour to be able to work with you. And that I hope that the Dog Guide Handlers group continues under your current leadership and those that have worked with Jude in the early days, that Jude's dream is realised, that we can have reinforced an active, a constructive and a supportive dog handlers group. At any time over the journey, appropriate, and of course, if it is that you need specific advice, you always go to your local organisation. But in a way that I would be independent, I'm happy to help. And it's my pleasure to listen to your stories, to watch your stories on your Facebook link. And I think, I'm hoping that you're getting the support, and certainly from the peer group you get it. So stick tough, hang tough. It does all work out. Thank you, Kevin. It's been a wonderful experience for me.
Oh, thank you, John, for that incredibly rich presentation. Look, I really can't think of a more deserving winner of the Judith Killen Golden Harness Award. Thank you, and all the best.
Thanks, Kevin. Time's away. If you did want to take a couple of questions, I'm in your hands.
Yes, if there is. What's the time? I'll see. Oh, yeah, we've got a minute. Is there any hands up, Erica?
Don, do you actually have the award?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Can you hold it up, please?
I will. There it is. Thank you. Now, I can tell you, I've done some research on this. It's about 20 metres tall. It's glass.
It's 20 centimetres tall, yeah.
Does that sound right? About 10 centimetres wide. I don't know. About 6 centimetres wide. I'm not real good on measurements, should be better. But what it says is Judith Killen, Golden Harness Award, DGHA, presented to John Gosling AM, 2021, Guide Dog Handlers Australia. And that is something special.
Thanks.
Sorry, thanks for picking me up, Erica.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Okay, well, we better wind it up here, I think, because we've got to get into our final session. So thanks again, John. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. All the best. Thank you.
Rightio.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website, www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?